Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
We have please for Mr. Philip Kinsella.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me all right? Can you hear me?
You might want to be a bit higher, sorry.
A bit high.
There is a way to do it. You speak.
I'll do that. Well, thank you very much for having me here. And I never wanted to be a ufologist or a researcher, like many of you good people. Just because I'm standing here and got a talk doesn't make me any more special than you, because we're all part of this phenomenon. But the real essence of what we've been told by the system that we serve and we trust, when they turn around and tell you that UFOs and what we call aliens don't exist, you know, that kind of went against my thoughts with regards to the phenomena at large. And I had numerous experiences with UFOs, but not with aliens. There was only one particular time that I had a major and very traumatic experience with so-called extraterrestrials in the winter of 1989, when we lived in a small village of Marston Mortain, just outside Bedfordshire. And subsequent to that experience that I had, that I will go into, made me realize that the phenomena, or most certainly the extraterrestrial hypothesis, is not as clear-cut as we've been formerly led to believe. And I offer an opinion or my own thoughts on it. It does not mean to say that I am right. And I have to state categorically for the record that I am open to all forms of speculation, because belief is a very dangerous thing to corrupt in another person or destroy. And this is the problem with not only the UFO field of investigations, but also cryptozoology and other areas of great interest to myself, and obviously for yourselves as well. So I'll talk about what happened to me, and I did suffer through media outlets. I'm not here for sympathy. I am here for answers to those questions we're still looking into, most notably the UFO phenomenon itself and those known as the Greys. But embarrassingly, when I had my subsequent abduction in 1989, I record the events, whereas most people can't, and I'm quite hard to hypnotize or regress. Someone tried it once and they failed. So in the winter of 1989, we lived in a cul-de-sac in a large house. At this, I never made a record of the date. Why would I? I was 20 years of age. I had no wish to take this any further. It was an ordinary night. I've got back home from the train from Millbrook, from Bedford, walked a mile and a half so back home, and got up to the drive to the house. So my brother and my sister and our dog, yes, I have, there was a dog present too, would you believe, our pet dog, who actually reacted to the phenomena when it happened. So I walked in to the hall that was all glass to the front, through to the kitchen. We had a large kitchen diner, and then to the left was the conservatory. And I'm just laying back against the sideboard, looking out to the hall with the frosted glass windows. And I must add here that on the lower part of this house, if you went straight forward as opposed to across, which I did to get to the kitchen, my brother and I had a very large study stroke bedroom and a bathroom by it, because there was bedrooms upstairs. We wanted an area where we could work and write downstairs. So I was leaning against the cabinet, looking out to the hall. My brother is stood in front of me in the dining area, so he wouldn't have had access to what was going on in the hall, and my sister was to my far left, and the dog was sitting in front next to the breakfast bar. And all of a sudden, there was a change in atmosphere. It was almost as if it had become electrified. It was very bizarre. Never experienced this before. And all of a sudden, my brother kind of like went into a type of trance. Would you believe it? He stiffened and he raised his head to the ceiling. And he said, there's going to be an earthquake or grandma's going to die. Well, there certainly wasn't an earthquake, and our maternal grandmother was not dead at that point in that time. And as he was saying this, the dog in front of the breakfast bar started to react to something that appeared to have caught his attention to the front of the hallway outside. And I saw a light coming up to the to the hall, to that area, from the driveway. And I thought our mum had finished work early and was coming up in her car because she had to work late. But then I found that the light was increasing in intensity. It was a white light, and it grew. And the more it grew, and as my brother stood there frozen, I can't even recall or remember what my sister was doing. This light intensified, and the glass seemed to shift backwards and forwards as though it was like something from one of those cartoon things, you know, where everything becomes pliable. Matter no longer applies. And immediately, as the dog was going barking, petrified, I saw what I can only describe, and I'm very black and white, very grounded, was a small being, about 3 foot tall. It was clad entirely in black. And it was very diminutive and small, and it had what I thought was a motorcycle helmet on its head. There were no markings, it seemed like it was molded all into one, and it came through the glass of the house and ran into the downstairs stroke bedroom and study. And immediately the glass returned to normal. The dog was going furious. I was stunned. My brother came out of his trance. And the only thing I could think to say was, there's an intruder in the house. And then I reached behind me to get a large knife, and I pulled out the knife, and I screamed, there's an intruder in the house. And then this thing, whatever it was, ran very quickly from the corner to the left, where our room was, across the hall, up the stairs, and disappeared. Well, I couldn't make heads or tails of it. I had no idea what had happened. My sister remembers the event very well. She could see the being, only myself and the dog. Doesn't put me in good light, does it? I do have a sense of humour with this now. So, amazingly, incredibly, in the early hours of that morning, I found myself floating on my back, exactly in the same position as where the small being had come through the door, and it was 3 foot off the floor, so on my back with my head facing now the kitchen doors, which were all glass. All this has got to do with matter and, you know, antimatter. It's almost as if something's trying to get me to be aware of the fact that things can come through solid objects. We'll get to that in a while. So as I'm laying on my back and I wake up, I can't move, and I'm thinking, is this sleep paralysis? If it is, I'm awake, I'm conscious, but I can't move. And I'm drawn through on my back, through to the kitchen doors, then turned round to the entrance to the conservatory, and then through to the conservatory doors, through the kitchen and the conservatory, and out into a garden where we have a large patio and a big pond. And it's dark. There was no clock for me to see what time it was. And as I came out, I was arched upwards, as though I was now in a standing position and no longer on my back. And when I looked up, there were lots of UFOs, lights, and I remembered clearly thinking, my God, they're real, they're here. What the hell is the problem? What is everyone moaning about? What are they worried about and arguing about? They're here. And immediately I saw one object that was circular. I can't recall the shapes of the other objects because they were lights, so they were hard to define from where I was, but this was big. And as soon as I clocked it, I felt myself being pulled up to it very quickly. And when I reached the kind of like metallic, grayish metallic, dirty looking hull, if you want to call it, I went out again. When I woke up, this is the embarrassing part, I found myself disorientated, I was very hot, I was naked, and I was laying on what I can only describe was a hard or medical bed, if that's the right word to use. The room was kind of dimly lit, but there was some light directly to the kind of left side. There was a corridor, appeared to be a corridor, with some light emanating from it, but I couldn't look in there because I was strapped from the legs and the arms down. I could move my head, and I'm thinking, well, where am I, and what the hell has happened to me? I'm like, this is crazy. I mean, you know, one minute I was that being that came through the door, now I'm being pulled through the house, and I'm laying in this place that's kind of hot. And when I looked to my right, there were what I can only describe 3 reptilians. There were 3 of these things. That is not an adequate description. My brother is an artist. He's drawn the reptilians. They were quite bulky. They were quite strong. But they were covered in a very thick mist. I could see through it. And they were moving backwards and forwards in a strange gait. Some people have said they've been ritualistic. I don't know. Moving backwards like this, side by side. I had a stroke many years ago, and I sometimes get my words mixed up. So they were kind of like moving side by side like this. And I was, that was it. I freaked. And then I also found that there was some kind of foreign implement that had been inserted into the lower part of my anatomy. I don't need to go into detail about what that was, but I felt it within the lower abdominal region as though it was pulsating. And although at this point in 1989, most people mocked it, laughed about it, but I can assure you the terror was incredible. And there are some incredible parallels to what I'll address afterwards about this. Okay, some things that you need to think about, I think. So as this is happening, I'm starting to scream. People laugh or joke, they take the mickey out of you, but when you've been taken out of your normal environment and shoved into something that's like science fiction, but it's happening to you, you are physically feeling this, that is a new kind of terror. That is not one of benevolence, love, and light. Immediately, I don't know how long I've been screaming for, but when I realized there was a grey, a small one, that appeared where the light was to my left and from what I think was a corridor, and I knew it was a corridor. It appeared, it was slightly more kind of like the colour was cream more than grey, but it seemed mechanical and it seemed like it was doing what it had to do, and there was some kind of relief because when I looked to my right, those things had gone and the device was being retracted, not by the grey, but by some other means. People say, can you remember what the room looked like? No, because it was partially in darkness, but there was some fixturing or stuff on this side. So I saw it going off, and then I was ordered by the grey to dress. I was relieved because I wanted to get off there, and my night stuff was on the floor. I dressed, and I was ordered to follow it through to this corridor, which I thought was a corridor that had a wall to it. And when we went through it, there was light. There was some lights above the top. I couldn't see what the lights looked like because it was emanating through this kind of like mist. And as we reached the wall, the grey's standing there looking at me, and I'm like, well, what do I do next? And it's like the door then disappeared, and I could see out to the village, and it was becoming morning, and the grey wanted me to get out. And I'm like, you just want me to go? Heights aren't my thing, I can't do this. And I felt this push, and then I was in the air coming down with two other greys beside me. I was ordered not to look at them. Strange through here that I'd see one and not to look at these two. But the last part that I'm coming to is the most, was very disturbing. As I came down to the ground, there was another being that was standing by our pond, and where the gravel and the stuff was, and he had this, there was this other craft above him, not very big, much smaller than what I come from, and I didn't bother to look behind me, I wanted to get away from that. They must have played off, I don't know. But this grey was different. It seemed different. He was roughly about 4 feet tall. He wore a one-piece uniform with knee-length boots. He had a pointed hat that seemed to be quite smart. My brother's drawing tried to recreate or replicate the image of the being called Noddy, although he bears no reference to Enid Blyton's creation of Noddy. If you've seen animated plastic moving, then that's quite horrifying. So this being is standing there with his arms folded like that, and he's got this scowl on his face, and he's looking at me really angry, and I'm like, you're angry with me? I've just had this experience that I don't know what the hell is about. I wanted to punch him. I wanted to punch him in his face, but I couldn't move. And I thought, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask him Noddy a question. I said to him, how on earth am I able to get through locked and bolted doors? How is that possible? And I knew that if Noddy could give me the answer to that, I would have the secret to this phenomenon. But he looked at me shocked, his eyes open wide. He was like a grey. A bit more human looking than a grey, but he was, if you looked at him, he was definitely not human kind of thing. And his mouth opened to an O, and then he slowly began to raise his head underneath the craft, and he started to rasp this metallic, inaudible voice that sounded to me, and I've said to my brother, like the voice synthesizer that we used to have for our ZX Spectrum, which is very metallic and raspy. And at that point, I found myself coming back through the glass. The frozen image of him remaining stationary haunts me as what happened, and I'm being pulled back through to my room, and then bang, went back into my body. The abduction phenomena repeatedly and continuously suggests to us that people are being abducted physically. There was also another element that I was credited with back in 1996, because after this episode occurred, I wanted answers. And I suffered through the media's interpretation of what they thought it was all about. Now, with regards to that abduction, I had continuous nosebleeds to my right nostril. The doctors were going to cauterize them, but after 2 years they stopped. I had 3 marks on my right arm. I had 3 triangular red marks behind my right ear that my brother tried to take photographs of with a Polaroid camera. You know those instant developing cameras? Do you remember them?
Yeah.
But however many times we pulled that thing out, it did not come up. It didn't develop. It just came up as a blank, like a blur. And I found it hard to walk. People say, did you go to the doctors? Sure, I'd go to the doctors, you know, tell them I've been abducted by aliens, and an excuse might come. Had something shoved up there, you know? Yeah, what is he going to say? How is he going to take it? I was frightened and I didn't understand. Now, another researcher recently, Pierre Sabat, because we're in touch with a lot of researchers, has examined the case thoroughly. And I have nothing to lose and everything to gain if someone can tell me what that was about. And he found something very interesting about what Noddy was doing and what my brother had been doing. My brother had gone into some kind of trance. He lifted his head up to the ceiling and he said his 2 words were, there's going to be an earthquake or grandma's going to die. Noddy also replicated what my brother had been doing by lifting his head up to the underneath of the craft and scrambling language that I couldn't understand. And this other researcher believes that these beings, these entities, are scrambling reality, mimicking and scrambling it, so that we will not be able to understand what's happening. Now, my ear, I had problems with my right ear for many years. Went to the doctors repeatedly, they looked in, they were a bit puzzled, left it. And the last time I went, I have the records at home, some years ago now, and the doctor had a look in, and she said, hang on, I need to go and get another doctor. And I thought, my God, what has she found? Because I kept feeling there was something blocked in it, and I felt it move, like pull back. One birthday, when I was relaxing, I felt it pull back, so I wanted to get it checked. She got the other doctor, and the other doctor looked into the ear, and she said, it looks like it's still healing, it has a crystalline structure around it, and left it at that. She put the device down and walked off, and the doctor said, have you been abducted by aliens? Those were her exact words to me. Now, wouldn't you think that they would have sent me to an ear specialist to get this checked out? I went back to my car far worse than when I got into the doctors. And it still puzzled me, and I'm like, it was something like The Invaders or The Twilight Zone, where everything was weird. And I thought, I need to look into this. I need to seriously look into the abduction phenomena. I did write about this. Matthew Williams, a wonderful guy, years ago had a, I think it was Truth Seekers magazine, and I wrote about the event, and that's my initial drawing of Noddy. Of what he looked like, a little bit more kind of looking there. This is years ago, and of course that was me when I was investigating young me. Wasn't I a handsome devil? And my brother and I just wanted to be children's authors, not UFO investigators. So I wanted to document the experience when it happened, and we were in touch with, well, Jenny Randalls did contact us all those years ago. She's more interested in us being twins than the phenomena itself, but bless her, maybe that's something that was she was interested in at the time. I then, in 1996, 89 was the event, my brother's also had an experience of his own that was some years before, very different from mine. We only can recall one abduction, and I state that. There may have been another two, but I cannot say about that if I don't know. There's some strange things that happened. So for those years, it's 1989 to 1996, I kept thinking how the Greys, what are they? Where do they come from? What are they? What are they doing? And in 1996, I remember I was at work and I had this incredibly, again, a download. I'd never experienced it before. People say I've had a download. They used to say, yeah, you know. Then I understood what they're talking about. It was the only one I had. But it was a flash of inspiration, as though my mind had opened and the answers then became prevalent. I am not saying that what I was given is stating what the Greys are. No, I'm not going out there as a guru proclaiming things. It was interesting. I submitted it to Alien Encounters magazine, a popular magazine then, and they considered it revolutionary within its speculation with regards to the abduction hypothesis. And it had everything to do with us being human, the reproductive system that we have, the soul, memory, the afterlife. And these were areas that a lot of ufologists were at the time not comfortable dealing with. And of course, as I said, dealing also with reptilians, how on earth did they kind of like fit into the paradigm of the Greys? I was confused. Now, this is another story, but I will just go on a little bit about the Greys before I go on to some other experiences. One of the things I discovered or found was that the phenomena, the UFO or UAP phenomena, is so complex. I believe that what's happening is that there appears to be two elements at play. When a UFO comes into our reality, it seems to distort the space around it and on occasions time. When an abduction occurs, that same force then targets the individual on a much stronger level of human and alien integration. And this is where things get really, really wild. I'll get back to that in a moment. You know, I'm sure we've all had those experiences of high strangeness where I believe to a degree in destiny, I believe in life after death, not the religious interpretations, it's a natural process of soul development, otherwise what's the point? We're born, we live, and we die. Your consciousness is then obliterated into nothing. I don't believe it because I've had an experience as well with regards to the other side that I haven't got time to talk about here, but just to make you aware of the fact that I'm very open to all forms of speculation, the process of reincarnation, the process of us being recording mechanisms, biological recording mechanisms that work upon a blank canvas in this life to shape and create memory. Why do you think that is possible? Why do you think that is important? I kept thinking, what's the point of being here? You know, we're such a negative planet, we're so destructive, and people, it's the truth, because a lot of times today, people prefer half-truths and lies than the truth itself, and I'm sorry, I'm for the truth, like all of you here. What was it? Why were we here? Why do we go through these episodes of difficulty and pain and joy and love and happiness and sadness and those terrible destruction? I think, like your mobile phone network system, you have the physical hardware and you also have the software that you can't see. Those signals emanating through to your mechanism, the physical mechanism, is merely information that's being translated through to the physical structure for you to understand. In its primary state, you wouldn't have a clue what's in there, unless you yourself was brought into that awareness, unless you were detached from the physical and taken into a higher vibrational frequency. You see? And the same with us, I think we're recording our experiences. I think that when we die, those memories are pulled back into the Godhead, or the source of all that we are, and perhaps expands upon the process of creation. It's only theory. Because with our experience, we have a blank canvas, we have nothing. But I think there is the much larger part to all of this, and I think maybe perhaps the Greys are interested in us as procreative, birthing beings with memory, with taste, with smell, feeling love and empathy. And if they are clones, well, obviously those clones are outside the field of creation, aren't they? Because they haven't come through the correct passage as we have done through the natural perfect birthing cycle. I'm not going to blow your brains just yet. So, after the publication of the article in 1996, I then was very fortunate to meet, and I'm good friends with Peter Robbins, who is the American author. I know that Peter went through a lot of difficulties, that's been cleared up. But he is a brilliant researcher, let me tell you, and he knows the people. We met him and he said, you know, you've got to go down to Rendlesham because there's a lot of strange things happening down there. You all know of the 1980 Rendlesham event in Suffolk, do you, all of you, with the UFOs of the US military, Colonel Charles Hobb, we've met him, he's a lovely man, and Penistone and Burroughs. Well, I'm not going to go into that, but needless to say, the forest itself was, let's just put it this way, very strange and very intriguing. So we've gone and made numerous exploits to the forest for me, my brother and Susan, another good friend of ours who is like our Scooby-Doo gang. We drive the 2 hours or so from Bedford to Suffolk. And we saw some very strange things. And we had an amazing UFO experience that occurred on the 8th of June 1998 at precisely 10:15 p.m. at night. We know that Jenny Randalls was also instrumental in writing with Dot Street and, that Brendan Butler was also instrumental with Dot Street and Jenny Randalls in bringing out Sky Crash, A Cosmic Conspiracy, The Devil Spearman, published in 1984. It kind of like caused a lot of controversy and people trying to bury it. Now, in our investigations, which you believe that I used to go there with my brother and just take pictures, and on this particular picture, what's that word? I keep forgetting it, where you try and make things out of patterns or shapes. What's that word called? Anyone remember it? That's it. This is not, because this photograph was analysed by Kodak. But this was in the Colonel Charles Hogg area in daylight, and I can't remember which one was the laser. Was it the bottom one, Andy? The bottom one, the laser? Very bottom one.
The top for the laser.
The very top.
Yeah, very top. That's it.
There. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. Not very well, but can you see that there? Now, that didn't appear when I took the picture on my phone, an old phone I no longer have. But on closer inspection within the forest, a lot of strange things have been occurring, and light phenomena, UFOs, black cat sightings, yeti sightings, all these types of things have been going on there, and people losing time. And this is the same with the national forests, or the national parks in America. I know that David Palais has done a lot of work on his missing 411 cases. You don't want to go down there, and he's not the only one with regards to the really chilling aspects of what really has been going on in many of those national parks. I'm not here to scare you, but we have to deal with the truth. And that's why we're here. This is what a very grainy image, but I used to have a clearer image, and I tried to look high and low for this image, and I can't find it. So we had to get this. Can you kind of see that there? And on another image that we had, I can't prove to you, but I will state that this looks like it's some type of North American Indian or warrior. It had a human face, it had kind of like a thing on its head, and it has a sash across there, that is a definite sash, and the building up of the uniform it's wearing is an armour. It seems to have only built halfway up because part of its body is missing there. And this is just one element of the mysteries that we caught, so that in these areas of high strangeness, you know, there's a plethora of events with ghosts, with black cats, with all these types of things that I've just mentioned. But again, it wasn't making any sense. I mean, this was supposed to be a UFO hotspot for the military, which did occur, I believe, in 1980 with not only Jim Penniston and John Burroughs, but also Colonel Charles Holt. Now, on the 8th of June 1998, when my brother and I had been, and Susan had been visiting there, I remember getting out of the car and saying one night, I'd really love to meet Brenda Butler. At this point, I didn't know where she was in the world. I had no idea. And would you believe it, that as we did a sky watch that night in the forest, the three of us, we came across some flashing lights in the forest, and we thought, my God, there's a UFO that's landed. Well, it turned out it wasn't a UFO. It was a lady with another man, and with a they had a white Alsatian with them, German Shepherd. And as we passed them, the lady seemed quite guarded, and they were playing some music and taking photographs. And when we passed them, she said, "All right," and I said, "Yes, thank you very much." And then I had this feeling, it just came into me, and I said, I need to go back and see that lady. She said, "Oh no," I said, "No, I need to go back and see her." So they were crouched down in that copse of woodland, and I said, "Are you looking for the orbs?" And she said, "Yes, why?" And I said, "Because I'm hoping to meet Brenda Butler." She said, "My dear, I am Brenda Butler." Mm-hmm. So that is how we met, and we decided at that point to collaborate with the research and write a book together, which we'll get to in a moment. On the 8th of June 1998, my brother Susan and myself went to the forest again. A week before this, we had done a psychic experiment to ask them, whoever they are, to show themselves to us. We wanted to see them. We didn't want any recording equipment. People say, "Oh, this is called no." When you have these experiences, they're very personal. And it's not like something that, you know, I'm not a guru. I wanted to find out for myself. I wanted to see it for myself. If you brought a piece of the Roswell craft here and you showed people, they wouldn't believe it. And an example, if Christ walked through those doors right now, God help us, no one would believe it. So what was the point? So we did this psychic experiment. I got the idea from Karen Carpenter's song, Calling Occupants, and I thought, I wonder if that's possible, because we've been doing a lot of research in the forest anyway. So we did the psychic experiment, we got nothing back, and then the 8th of June 1998 came, beautiful night, got ourselves stationed near Capel Green, that's where the farmer's house is, in a big field, there's the outer perimeter of the forest. And when nightfall came, it was a beautiful full moon, beautiful stars, it was a kind of warm night. And then we walked into the field, I used a pair of dowsing rods to see if I could find the place where the original craft came down. I don't know, they crossed over. I'm not saying that's where it did, but it seemed to work for us. We sat there and we meditated. And that was roughly around about 10 to 10 at night. At 7 minutes past 10, we suddenly noticed from the farmer's house a red light. It seemed like a catheter wheel going round, and it seemed to be coming forward very slowly. And we thought that the farmer had discovered us in his field, because at that point of time, half the field was dirt, the other was crop. So we ran back to the edge of the forest, and I stopped and looked back and thought, well, if that's a car, why has it only got one light, and why is it red? Normally car lights are white, aren't they? Or like it's off-white. And then we saw this light shoot across from the dry part of the field into the crop and disappeared. We thought, my goodness me, that was amazing. The best was yet to come. At 10:15, our direction was where the light had disappeared. Further down there were some trees, and there was a flash of light, and this object appeared. The only way I can describe it to you was that it was a triangle with a gap and a circular undercarriage, and the mechanism, the top part started, and it was big, it was huge, it was above one of these trees. The top half started to rotate one way, the bottom part of the circular configuration was moving the other. It was a bank of blue lights around it, and I couldn't believe it. And we looked in the binoculars, and there it was. It made no sound, no noise. There was light emanating from the top part of the object, and I bolted, I ran for it. And all I remembered was my jeans getting soaked, and both Susan and Ronnie worried and screaming and calling out, because they were also afraid that what they were seeing was, my God, that's extraterrestrial, and the farmer might come out and shoot us all. But I wanted to get to the object. This has been documented. And when I got closer and closer underneath it, I slipped, fell, and immediately it went out. And I took in some dirt, and I laughed, and I cried. I laughed because I thought that was incredible, then I cried because I thought no one on earth would believe this, but I didn't care. The next day, we sent a report to UFO magazine, to a person called Green Forbes, who I contacted, sent all the material to him, who was then going to send it to Peter Robbins. I don't know how this man knew that we knew Peter Robbins, but we didn't hear anything, so I phoned back up. Is this a conspiracy? No, it's odd. Can I speak to Green Forbes, please? I sent some material. We don't have anyone here of that name. I don't know what that was about. It was just very strange. This is the book that Brendan and I originally wrote and was published by Capital Band Publishing Company in England, released in 2013. They were very good publishers. They're no longer around because sadly John Day has passed over and his wife, she's no longer doing it, but they had a huge publishing program of Mind, Body and Spirit books. And I was very fortunate for John, who was a good man, to have published mine and my brother's books on the contract. But the book before that, Believe, another book I wrote was published. When I spoke about the events of my abduction in 1989 and then, he phoned me and said, I'm afraid we can't put the part in with reptilians or in or your intrusive investigation because people won't buy it. So I had a choice of whether or not to not have the book published or have it published. But thankfully it was published in Matthew Williams' Truth Seekers before. So that was the book that was published by Capital Band. Didn't do very well because when you're dealing within ufology and you have certain famous cases, you dare step on someone's toes. You have those investigators who believe that they have all the answers, but they own exclusive rights to the phenomena, which they do not. And it's there for everyone. I've always said passionately, we are all part of this phenomenon. It does not exist for one person. And be very careful when someone tells you what it is. We still don't know. All we have is a blank page, but we have theoretical content that we can work around. So, you know, people may attack me for that. I've been attacked already, but I spoke to anybody about it. It doesn't bother me. I'm not worried anymore. It used to really bother me, but I'm not concerned. And it's been reprinted. It's out now, but it's released in October. And someone's already jumped on there to give it one star. How very kind. And done it so privately, so you can't see who it is. You know, so it doesn't bother me. I'm like, yeah, okay. But there's a very interesting case in this book, Sky Crash Throughout Time. UFOs, Reptilian Man, and Strange Mysteries. Now, Brenda Butler, she was involved with the research of Rendlesham and has to be heralded as a wonderful investigator. You know, I think she's not for the limelight, and she's not a person like, look at me, she's very grounded. But would you believe that in around about 1984, she met with a reptilian man called David Daniels. Now, you would laugh, wouldn't you? In fact, I found it very hard to believe when I was going through her research. But then when I started interviewing the people who had seen this thing, they weren't lying at all. And in fact, this David Daniels had also infiltrated a lot of ufologists during the time, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, Ralph Noyes, who was linked with the MOD, and he wrote a science fiction book as well too, and David Daniels made good friends with him, and many other researchers as well. That's just a few of them. But very bizarre. No one wanted anything to do with this David Daniels at all. In his human form, he had a cropped blonde hair, very handsome, very tall, used to wear a long leather jacket, and then when he turned into this, on numerous occasions, people were quite scared. Now, make of it what you will. Again, it seems like something from The Invaders. Do you remember that wonderful series, TV series? Or The X-Files, where you see these things and you're not sure what it's about. Now, what's interesting as well, very quickly, I'll just tell you, it's funny how Rendlesham came back again, because years before I met Brendan, years before I got involved with this, we had done a skywatch there with BEAMS, the British Earth and Aero Mystery Society. I don't have anything to do with them anymore. They're still running, I think. But we got there, and we stopped off in this pub, not for drinks, because it's a bad idea to get drinks when you're skywatching. But Susan Ron and I were there, and this guy approached us. And he was very strange. He hung around us, he just appeared from nowhere. And his name, he wanted us to call him Joseph. And Joseph was interested. We had this uncomfortable feeling with him, but my brother and Susan said they thought they saw his arm change, like plastic. And when he followed us into the forest, he wouldn't leave me and my brother and Susan. They wanted to know everything about us. They seemed to know things about us. Then he disappeared. And on the way back in the truck, sorry, the minibus, the truck, he was the talk of that minibus. That's all they spoke about. And I wondered, is it possible that we had met one of the same person, but on different timelines? I'm not trying to make things fit, but when you're there in that experience and you start to see how things seem to connect, it kind of like made sense to me that this guy, and Brent said, no, wait, you could not have met him. No, you couldn't. And I'm like, well, I think that we did. I then went on to, and I'm not here to draw from myself, I'm very proud to share things with you. I also got involved with the psychic aspect of human consciousness, mediumship, life after death, this type of thing. It appears to me that when you've had an experience, a lot of people who've had UFO experiences, they tend to become more aware of who they are, what they are, where they come from, why they're here. It's almost as if a part of the mind has been shattered open and they're now questioning, whereas before the programming that we've all been been initiated into through birth, through the system, has been upset. And it feels to me like I need to look into the aspects of the afterlife because of the greys, and they're interested in hybridization. They're interested in apparently trying to create a new genus that is secret from us. Now, when I was abducted, I didn't see any hybrids or anything like that. Nothing of the kind. I mean, they were just doing what obviously they needed to do. And to me, that was intrusive and against my will. But people say, was it? We don't know. But I was more interested in the greys, because they seem to be the forefront of this program. And people say, well, there's tall greys as well, and you get the reptilians and the kingdom of them. But I can only report what happened to me, and I can only assess through what I'd experienced through some kind of theoretical debate in terms of what we may be dealing with. And of course, I have three copies of that. The You, the Public, Deceived, the Grandeur of Deception, Philip Mantle brought out. It's done very well. I'm very blessed with it. But the other copies I ordered didn't come through on time. So they're £10 if you want a copy afterwards. Well, you've got to sell. Poor authors have to push themselves, don't they? And as one man said on a film once, academics don't eat off gold plates, you know. Not that I'm academic. Paul Sinclair did the foreword to that book. He's a good friend, a brilliant researcher. Have you heard of him? In Benton, researching the ufology and also the cryptids, especially the werewolves. Werewolves. People think, oh no, they don't exist. And I was like, many years ago, no. But now stranger things occur, don't they? I haven't seen any werewolf yet. I don't think I want to see one from the reports that I've read and also what my brother and I have been looking into. Now, summarizing another experience that my brother and I were part and parcel of, which was incredible, and categorically proved to us, at least to other people, that we're not lying, that it is there, the phenomena exists. What happened was that on the 9th of April, 2016, my brother and myself had been invited to some police friends for an early birthday meal. So my brother and I drove to the small village of Copal where our police friends live, and my sister and her daughter, our niece, also came in a separate car. It was a wonderful evening. We had plenty to eat, nothing to drink. I don't drink anyway. And it was time to go. And at the time must have been roughly about 20 to 10, when my niece and my sister had gone into their car and then left, because my sister lived in Lower Shelton and my niece in Master Mortain. And at this point now, we have moved from Master Mortain to Kempston. So my sister and my niece go off and we say our goodbyes, probably about 10 minutes later. And we're in the car. It's a clear night, the stars are out. And I'm making my way through Copal, and then going onto the bypass. Now, what happened when my brother and I were in the car? Something very strange occurred, because we could see these three lights, very large lights in the distance, and roughly around about the place where we lived. And I thought, first of all, my mind's saying they're workmen's lanterns. You know, like the lanterns you get in stadiums, the big, huge lanterns? There were three of them, all in a triangular formation. So as we're driving back and I'm getting nearer, I go under Cow Bridge. It's a little bit difficult to explain, and then up. And the lights are there. And I pull the car over, and my stomach drops, and so does my brother's. And they were much bigger than that. And we wound down the windows. The reason we did that was to hear if we could, to see if we could hear any noise. There was nothing. These three white objects were huge in a triangular formation. You could see the stars through them, but there was no noise. So get it? I put down on the gas, go down our road, and there they are. And I park up, and I can't believe it. My brother gets out of the car, still incredible. We get out my Rover. I had a Rover then, an automatic Rover. And where we are, there's gravel and like the front of the driveway. And we're looking up, and they're just sitting there. And they are huge. They must have descended. They must have descended because they were much lower now. There were no markings on them. They were bright. No noise. The other strange thing that we clocked was that there was no sound around us. It was as if it had just snowed. And do you know what was the other incredible part to all of this? No person walking down the road, because we live down a small road. There's cars coming down, people coming back from the pub. It's Saturday night. This was a 11:15 at night. No one walking their dog, no one driving their car. In fact, there was only me and my brother, no one. And we're looking up, and we're absolutely stunned. And I have my phone in my man bag, and it starts to buzz. Someone's trying to contact me, and it's buzzing. And I had the choice of whether or not to put my hand in there, pull out the phone, and answer it, or take a picture. I chose to leave it, because I knew that if I took my attention off of those objects for one moment, they might go. So I watched them. My brother's there trying to calm me down, and if I just come over here, where you see the objects here, these now, I'll just forget to what happened afterwards. They were in a triangular formation. These are the ones that we saw. I didn't take a picture. They were descending. They were much lower and stationary. This one here starts to move very slowly over to this one. It stopped, it didn't eclipse it. Then it moved all the way back to its original position. And then they aligned themselves so magnificently into a straight line and just shot off. I nearly collapsed. I said, my God, that is amazing. It was awe-inspiring. It's a little bit frightening, very excited. There was no fear connected with that one. So when we go in, my phone is ringing again in my man bag, and I take it out. It's my niece Charlie. And I knew what she was going to ask, and I said, are you phoning about the UFOs? And she said, have you seen them? I said, yes, they have just been stationary above us. I'm just going to now make a report on Facebook to log this. Well, a number of things have recently occurred which I'm very delighted about with regards to these objects that were huge. It turned out that my niece, when she had dropped my sister off at Lower Shelton, she was driving back to Marston, and she saw these three lights in a triangular formation moving across the sky right over her. She was scared. She's got a music blaring out, some kind of music, it's like rock music. But she gets her mobile phone out and she films these three objects. We have the film, it's been analysed, we've done all sorts of things with it, and there are unknowns. And so we immediately, a few years later, because she actually lost the images, they reappeared on her computer, and we sent them to some UFO experts to be analysed. They have everything, but a lot. And they come back as unknowns. But I can assure you, they were absolutely incredible. No lost time, we weren't abducted, but it was an event I will never forget, even my brother. That's another image of the enhancement of the lights that we've seen. And they weren't just flash, and they the lights were actually communicating with one another, which they found as well. Now, fast forward, another chap that I know that's just come, I was at an OLM conference doing a talk there, Chris Evers had dealt with that, and a chap approached me and said, I've got some information about your UFO sightings of the night of April 2016. I am all ears, I said. And he said, I'll tell you what, mate, I'll send you the information through the post, and he did. And the UFOs were actually tracked passing the Isles of Scilly and moved across this trajectory here. Now, this is where Dave Twine had witnessed them on a skywatch, a place called Host, also near Cross, on the edge of Blue Forest. And they filmed it very clearly. And we have that footage as well. The only problem with that is the timing of all the witnesses. We believe that the UFOs, or at least I had contact from another UFO organization that asked me, are you absolutely sure that the UFOs you saw at 11:15 p.m. at night? I said, absolutely to the T. My brother and I will not lie, that is the time that they appeared. And he said, well, the timeline appears that to be that they're, you know, seem to fit with the ones that were tracked, unless of course they came back or they made a detour, or perhaps there was two sets of UFOs, because the lights appeared orange, but to us white. We're still exploring that possibility. Now they know the UFOs were communicating with one another because they're flashing very quickly with one another. They've tried to analyze it with Morse code, it comes up with nothing. The UFOs were looking for something. That much we believe was going on. The UFOs were here looking for something, they were tracking something. And we also believe that they were tracked on radar, and letters to the MOD and to other airfields have come to nothing. Dave Twine did contact Nick Pope, but Nick didn't really seem interested in it. There we are. Now, the other thing with regards to this is that with the UFOs, is that the very next day with me and my brother, that was on the 9th of April 2016 at 10:15 p.m. at night, and I can't even describe, when you're in the presence of them, it is really very shocking. It does something to you. It's like, Ronnie said, it felt a little bit religious, you know, like that kind of like feeling of euphoria and glory. You know, I'm not talking about God, you know that feeling, have you ever had that before, where you felt lifted, where you felt empowered, where you felt part of something grand? Has any of you ever felt that before? Any of you? Yes?
Sure.
It's not ego or making you any special, it's just saying that deep inside your soul you feel it. I wonder what they were looking for, but I can assure you that they were stationary above us, they did the strange maneuvers, and they went off. Now on the 10th of April 2016, the very next night, my brother and I were in the house, we heard this racket, a huge racket outside. We thought, what the hell is that? We went outside, there is a helicopter, very, very low, over the roof of our house. It was a white helicopter, it wasn't black, it was not a police helicopter, it had no markings on it, and where the helicopter was, the two pilots in it were seated in the cockpit and they were facing us. So as they circled round three times, we could see them, they could see us, they were that low. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. And after the third sweep, they went off. We don't know. Is it some kind of, was it an actor trying to deflect what happened? If some people get confused with time, so, excuse me, sir, I'd like to find out about the UFOs. You mean the helicopter? I don't know, that's probably my naive mind thinking, but it just seemed very odd, very strange. And I was certain that it would make the papers. I wasn't interested in phoning the papers up. God forbid, they've done reports on me and my brother before about UFOs and they've just taken the mickey out of us. I wasn't interested in that anymore, but it didn't make anything. So this information started to come to light. And isn't it interesting with most UFO cases that years have to pass, like a nice good bottle of red wine that matures over time. and then more people want to know about it after the events have happened. It is bizarre. This is an article, one of my articles, Aliens, the Dead, and the Eternal Mind of Creation. And I want to go back to that, because I think it's important that we have to understand that we're looking for these answers, and yet with the human species, we're not sure about where we came from, why we're here, you know, our genus, the truth of that. I'm not talking about the Sunday school version that we've been programmed with, don't ask any questions, just accept. Well, I'm sorry, but we have to ask questions. Genesis, who and what created us? I still believe that we were created or evolved by some form of extraterrestrial intelligence. People call them the gods. I don't feel myself personal, though I may be wrong. I don't think the greys were part and parcel of that, although I may be wrong, because we are open to all theories and speculations. Could the greys themselves be the architects of the dream world, the mind, consciousness? Could they be the ones that's now creating a new genus? Hybrids, because the human experiment has failed, because as a species we don't even know how to treat one another, and that is the truth of God. I find it really hard to understand this planet and the people on it, and I'm sorry, I have to be honest here. Even in your car, you get people who are like mad to get in front of you. People get angry. It's okay, we all get angry. It's a human emotional trait that we have. And some people are really nasty. And what's happened with our species is that we have never truly evolved. We've always taken steps backwards. Every time we've tried to go forwards, power, corruption, money, and greed has seen to our destruction. Continuous. It's something that is fact. Through each epoch, we have fallen. And perhaps, maybe, other species, other life forms have taken it upon themselves to create perhaps a new species, and that may exist in another hyper-universe, dimension, another universe. We don't know. It's a possibility, isn't it? Because the program seems to be very important to them. And what's also interesting, I found, is that, you know, I'm not saying the greys are bad, I'm not saying they're good. I don't know what side they're on. But I know one thing, they lie to their abductees, mostly. They don't tell them truths. It's obvious they don't want the person to know what's going on. And the other interesting part to it, with regards to them, is that you can't touch them. Once they go, they're gone. It's like chasing shadows. So what I think the greys are, perhaps, are interested in us as a species. Maybe they found us as a replicating species ourselves. We go through birthing cycles, all that type of thing. And they're interested in that because of cloning. And if they are AI, which most people state, I'm not disputing that. I find it very hard to believe that an AI mechanism will want something called the soul. Because, you know, whether or not we're dealing with quantum consciousness, it's hard to say, but I would find that very... I think there's a lot more to them than an AI mechanism sent out to the universe to find life and then mess around with it. I think their program is linked with consciousness and with the soul. And let me give you an example. If I cloned you, and this is theoretical, in a laboratory, I clone 10 copies of you. You, in my mind, are the natural process of evolution. You've come through the womb with memories from the other side, inherent memories that are stored within the etheric body. And you're here to create a new blank canvas. When you pass over, I hope and I pray that I'm right, I think I am, that your soul return back to source, to the Godhead, to the heart of all that is and all that will be. But your clones will only have the memory of one single physical incarnation. I'm not talking about, you know, cellular memory and all that type of thing. I'm talking about the experience. So that when that copy of yours dies, perhaps the signature of the energy is not strong enough to get back to source. And if these greys have replicated themselves through the act of cloning, because we understand that they cannot reproduce, why is it that they have found a species that can reproduce? Why are they interested in reproduction when they themselves cannot do that. Their self-replication program seems to have cancelled out. It seems also to suggest that perhaps even if mechanically, they have lost themselves to the very fabric of what we represent. Or the greys also could be from another dimension or universe. It's founders are like, the humans are interesting. Let's take a look and see what we can do with them. The other thing that I had us discovered was that the abduction phenomenon in a lot of cases seems to replicate the near-death experience. Let me explain. In a near-death experience, have you heard about that? Where someone dies and they cross over? Has everyone heard of that?
Did you say near-death experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
NDE.
Yeah.
I had one many years ago, but it's I didn't meet people. It was just an amazing awareness of reality that's beyond this realm. But when someone has a near-death experience, when their heart stops, when the brain function stops, not necessarily the brain, but the heart, most notably, the person feels themselves going up into a tunnel of light more times than not. They meet loved ones who communicate with them telepathically. There is a sense of timelessness. And also, if the person, if their physical body has been diseased, on their return, when they're lucky enough to return, because that's the only way we know that an NDE exists, more times than not, the physical body is brought back to its correct frequency of awareness and they are healed. What's interesting with an abduction is that my understanding is if the greys take you, what if they actually take the real part of you, your soul, your consciousness, that really you are? They extract that temporarily from your physical body, take it into their vibration of reality where interaction is then possible, much like the NDE. And of course, anything that they do to the body on their level will obviously affect the physical counterpart on Earth. Implants, that type of thing. It's a tall order, isn't it? But we've got to look outside the box. And the reason that the person in an abduction is not always able to recall the events is it could be possible that the filtering of consciousness in this realm is so limited and now it's been taken out of its normal processing of reality, and thus it can't record, or it has problems recording the experience. It's interesting, isn't it? How we see this, and how we can use ideas or theoretical models to try and put together the pieces. I think this is more, not just about aliens invading Earth, or hiding, or UFOs coming from another planet. I think there is much more behind this. And I think that on a personal level, it gets more complicated as we look into it. I am accepting of people from the future. I am accepting of them coming from another planet. I am accepting of hyper universes, interdimensional levels of reality, you know, physical levels. In fact, you put it on my plate, I embrace all of them. But there are certain patterns that we have to look at. And interestingly as well, with regards to cases of cryptozoology. I'm not going to talk about it for very long. I'm just going to just mention here how there are certain key patterns which seem to connect one with the other one. Very slight. Are we saying that this phenomena is individual, so that you have the werewolves, you have Sasquatch, you have weird-looking creatures, UFOs, aliens? Where are they? Where are these beings? We can't catch them. As Paul Sinclair says, they're elusive to our reality. Skinwalker Ranch is another area in Utah, which I'm sure you're aware of, where a lot of research has been done into the phenomena that's occurring out there with strange light activity, portals opening, cattle mutilation, werewolves being seen. Skinwalker obviously is the local legend of the Nahaba tribe that cursed the land. Paul wonders about the names that we give places and how much life we give to something within the mind that can perhaps open these doorways for such realities to enter into our realm. Obviously, one of Paul's most amazing and incredible books, a brilliant researcher, I have to tell you, he's got his feet firmly on the ground. And he has dealt with a lot of witnesses, some of them quite high up, who had reported to him these strange activities, especially with werewolves. And he's talking to these higher people, and they're telling him, and it's like, well, that's what happened. The werewolves. I don't think that any of us want to encounter one of those, and I think that all of us will be safe tonight. Let's hope. I hope my car doesn't break down somewhere. I have a sense of humour, you know. I always say to people, I am human. I have a sense of wicked sense of humour. So, with regards to the cryptids, in a lot of the cases that Ronald and myself and many other researchers have established, is that when someone survives an episode, rather like, let's just give you an example of one of the national parks, where the rangers can't find them, they've just literally disappeared, and perhaps no less than a few seconds or moments behind the person or the group they were with. They normally explain that there is a sense of quietness. Remember the UFOs we saw on the 9th of April 2016? Absolutely like it just snowed. It was weird. With the cryptids as well, there seems to be an area of silence, as though the nature around it stopped, like the crickets or the insects have stopped. It's all quiet. And there's also a sense of being watched or feeling that there's something not quite right. And also smells are very predominant, especially within the areas of cryptozoology. Now, what's interesting, there was a guy called Phil Schneider. I'm sure you've heard of him. I'm sure you've also heard of the Dulcie War bases. Now, you can either leave it or accept it. But something must have happened to that man, Phil Schneider, who was found to have committed suicide, but that is questionable. He was found in his hotel room with a catheter wrapped around his neck. Because he was a geologist. He would go in with his men and start crawling down to the earth to get into areas of the earth. And the military at the Dulcie base had wanted this team of people to work there. When they broke through a certain part of the rocks that fell open and revealed this cavern, and he describes this stench like rotting eggs, the most worst garbage you can ever smell. And what's interesting is that in the cryptozoological departments of study, when people have experienced these beings, there is normally a very bad, putrefying smell that accompanies this. And the same with poltergeist activity, with sulfur being smelt. So in cases of this, Phil Schneider had his fingers burnt off his hand, he nearly died, there's a scar onto his stomach, and his toes were missing because one of the aliens, tall greys with big noses, had used these mechanisms and shot this ray at him. These men died. He then, to cut a long story short, got out of there and started to reveal his story and had a book that he'd written but never saw the light of day because he was found, quote-unquote, to have committed suicide in his hotel room when he was doing a talk on all of this. So did the establishments get to him? I think they may have done. Do I believe his story? I think it is open to suggestive that it did happen to him, because these areas like mine, and perhaps like yours, comes with examples that are so incredible and strange, it's hard for you to get your head around them, you know? Comes with high strangeness. So are we dealing with a phenomena that works as a one force and is projecting itself into the minds of all of us, its recipients, on varied levels? I don't know. Are we dealing with UFOs coming from another dimension, cryptids coming from another dimension? We don't know. It is interesting to speculate with regards to that hypothesis. The greys themselves are even greater mystery, because the phenomena again seems to change as we as researchers change with our thoughts and our opinions regarding the phenomena. Yet phenomena. Many years ago in 1989, and certainly before that, because my brother and I had some very UFO sightings before, one with our maternal grandmother when we were age 13 in 1982 in Felton in Middlesex. They used to live in a big house there, and someone put on there, "I don't see any big houses in Middlesex." Would you believe that? Well, my brother's got the photographs of the house. It's what a house my uncle built, next to where my grandparents had the other house next to them, where my uncle and then my grandparents moved into this one. There was a big silver ball the size of a football that came over in broad daylight to my brother and myself, who were young, and our maternal grandmother, and it hung over her head, didn't make any noise, there were no markings on it. And when we asked Grandma what it was, she said the fairies had come to take a closer look at us. We knew it was the fairies. At least I may be wrong there, and she could be right, because the phenomena seems to have morphed, doesn't it? So where I was back in 1989, certainly on the very physical level of the integration of this phenomenon, has come into question with regards to what these beings are, what they're up to, and why they turn up. Space, the final frontier, another area of contention with many people. I think it's amazing and fascinating. And there has been speculation to contemplate the fact that the universe is mapped out like our human brain. And I'm not going to get into debate about holographic projection imagery or that type of thing. I'm open to it because science is exploring it, especially when we look into the quantum realm of reality, going into the subatomic level of what reality is. And what they find as they go deeper, keeping it very simple, is that reality starts to break down and new realities appear. This is me at Rendlesham. I went with my brother, and they were going to do some filming anyway. On one occasion when we're in the forest, just something to lighten you up a little bit, not be too depressive here about the horrors of the abduction and the cryptids, but we were down in Bentwaters, and where the track is towards the gates, and it was an evening, Ronald, myself and Susan were there, and we were walking up, and all of a sudden it was dark, it started to get dark, there was no one else around, and there came the sound of this thump. And it was just to the side of us where the trees were. And it was a thump. It's hard for me to try to relay what that feeling is like, because you had to be there to experience. But it definitely was organic. And it wasn't a deer, this was a thump. And we thought, let's get the hell out of here, because I don't like the sound of whatever that is over there. And it felt like, although I can't prove it, but it felt like we were being watched. I wasn't interested at that point in cryptozoology. So if I'd known then what I know now, I think I would have gunned it out of there, got on my car and driven away really fast. This is the report that I found that beings had taken when I made my report about the 9th of April 2016 triangular configuration of UFOs. They've taken the report and placed it into a file of other reports in there as well. Sorry.
Do you need to go back into it?
Yes.
That's your last slide.
Good, lovely. That's fine, that's the last one. I don't know, is it? Yes, I think so.
Did you want to show your video, Philip? Because I can do it through another means if you want to show the video.
You may not be able to make up much of the objects that my niece had filmed. I do apologise, they are there. They've been analysed, but you need a bigger screen to see them. The other amazing footage that was taken beforehand is incredible. That's going into my new book that I'm working on. I'm almost finished now. That's it. These images were analysed by Jason Gleaves as well. He's a ufologist. And there was sound of my niece's rock music playing. These are the images that my niece had taken for my niece's images. I don't know if you're going to see them on there, so many apologise. There's a third one there, just there, slightly there, believe it or not, you can see the three of them. She filmed them, and they were moving off, and she's just making a comparison of the hole so they can get some kind of size to them. Always important if you're taking images of UFOs, please do it so you've got a tree or something so you can try and estimate the distance and so on and so forth. Yeah. And that's what really freaked her out. So that was that there with regards to that experience that she felt, and we were so delighted to find more. So my understanding is that the research, although we're spending an hour and a half here talking about it, It's interesting to share, you understand, and I always worry, I never want to overstep my mark with anyone else with their belief systems. Now, one of the other areas that really intrigues me with regards to the UFOs is the fact that there is something that's happening. We now know that they really exist. We now know that they're a reality. And for so many years, on numerous programs where, you know, other people, not just myself, other people had found themselves being ridiculed or talked down to. One of those programs I remembered, we were told we were going on beforehand, many years ago. Was it Constantine? I can't remember which one it was. Anyway, it was live. And we were told, oh, it's a serious discussion on UFOs. It was anything but. It was a joke. And I remember I suffered so much because I was chauffeur-driven there, and I could drive, but I was showing, when I was coming back in the car, do you know how I felt with the chauffeur in there, thinking, oh my God, because he saw it, this guy's like, wow, you know, what's going on? The absolute shame, and also with the experience of 1989, I want sympathy, I want to understand what happened, that's all I'm after. That's all I've ever been looking for these years. But I can tell you that the system now, it's so damning, that the Pentagon have released, kind of like saying, yes, there is something there. And you're not going to tell me that they've just opened up their department investigations. They've been doing that for years. Well, not so much the Pentagon, but certainly with regards to secret industrial units, complexes. They have. Because it's all to do with money. And I believe that. And one other thing, I'm not going to go too much into Roswell. If that was just an secret air balloon, does anyone get it? If it was that secret, why weren't the army registering and recording where it was? They didn't even know it was around. And that's how the media work in the press. They can infiltrate your mind, the way you think, the way you see things, and enough drip feeding, they'll get through to you. All the time, continuously. But I will just say to you that you have to be your own person, believe in your truths, and you know, that's the best way to be. Where is this leading me? My brother, because he's also a researcher as well, written some wonderful things, and he's a brilliant artist as well, a wonderful artist. We're looking into other areas now. UFOs are my passion, so is psychic consciousness, but also cryptozoology, which is very interesting. So, yeah. Well, I hope that you've liked that. I hope that's been of some interest to you. Is that all right?
Very definitely.
Yeah,
thank
lovely.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We have got time for questions.
Yes, I'm just going to ask. You shoot if you have any questions. Yes, sir.
I mean, I can talk for an hour. I mean, yes, Ed Mitchell.
Oh, yes.
You know, he said that our scientists know less than the brain and same language. That was after he had some interfaces.
Yes.
And that's the problem with the subject. It's so huge and it's morphing all the time.
Correct.
But you're talking about your three lights there. I was in Joshua Tree.
Sorry?
I was in Joshua Tree, California.
Oh, right.
Doing the Skywatch. And we had, like, a huge gold orb just appeared in the sky. That ejected another one, which ejected another one. So we had six gold orbs, like a whole necklace of gold orbs. It split into two threes, and it just morphed around like this, and then disappeared.
Mm.
And about 20 minutes later, you know, the police were everywhere. Blocking up all of the traffic light junctions because a lot of people were seeing. And then the following night, we had a gold orb appear on like the base of the mountain, which was quite close. That split into two, which split into four, into eight, into 16, and they were just like dancing around the mountain. They collapsed back into one light and then it's gone.
It's like morphogenic manifestation.
Yeah, and then 5 minutes later it appears on the next mountain. It's the same thing, bouncing around all the different lights, goes back into one, gone.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that you're correct. The phenomenon is so widespread.
Yeah.
It is almost, and I'm going to say this, impossible for us to conceive or understand of what we're dealing with. And I think that is why a lot of researchers have actually taken certain areas to explore, and maybe through experience.
Yeah.
But I
actually, there's a new book this week. It's from the Consciousness and Contact Research Institute, which is what Ignatius behind.
Oh yes, I've got his first book on that. They did the first book, didn't they?
Yeah, Beyond UFOs.
Yeah.
And the next one is 2,500 pages in four volumes. But it's all PhD academia, and it links what we were talking about with near-death experiences,
yes,
the body experiences,
yes,
DMT and psychedelic drugs, linking all of those things with being modalities of consciousness.
And I think that consciousness, I think as I was just going to say there, but I think that when you've had an experience, researchers will, you know, focus their attention upon that area, because by opening up to all of it, I mean, you're just going to end up with your head banging and banging. I also believe that consciousness is something that is very interesting, and once consciousness, when it's separated from here, and I've had experience on two occasions, one major one, it changes everything. It changes the way you see reality. And it's hard to explain, because there's no words to describe it. There's no... It just is. And I think we're just putting everything into a box, and we want to understand, which is great, but the phenomena refuses to reveal itself to us. And maybe we're not evolved enough for that. Maybe we have to go through some kind of jump in evolution. And this is very disturbing, because of preceding events of how fast we are accelerating now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you said, that the human race is a failed experiment.
Oh, that's the chapter heading for my book, the last chapter heading.
And I don't. The fifth time around.
Yeah, really. People will be offended, and I think and feel, you know, we are on the verge of collapse. I'm not a soothsayer or bringing doom and gloom, but from looking at it, we're just not evolved. We're not aspiring to where we should be going. And we have ourselves also to blame for that. Well, not us individually, but those at the top have conditioned us continuously. And this cycle is getting boring. And I think a lot of souls have come in here thinking, oh my God, we've got to deal with all this again, you know? And it's just, you know, but thankfully there are a lot of evolved souls now who are trying to bring their truths. I mean, we've got to be very careful with regards to that, because you don't want it to become a religion and a huge following and, like, you know, it turns into something you don't. We're all part of this phenomena. We're all part of this evolution. We're part of this connection with one another. I think what's horrible is the way that a lot of people are just carrying on existing and getting what they can from life and through people. And I think that's very sad. Yeah. I think
this new book, I mean,
I think the two of you better have a chat at the end, because we should ask a few other people if that's all right.
Very quickly, it's mainly about consciousness, going back to Paramatman and Advaita.
And that's what I'm interested in, consciousness. That's what I'm interested in.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I totally agree with both of you that it is definitely, for me, linked with consciousness.
Yes.
Your experience in, was it 1989?
1989.
I had an experience in 1989, which also opened my consciousness up. And I think an awful lot of people did around that time, sort of 1980s, 1990s, crop circles, that kind of thing going on.
Yeah, and I think it's an integration. You're targeted, you know, not necessarily on a bad level, but you're targeted. And at that point, things change for you on a monumental level.
Well, for me, it's never been. I've never had a negative experience. I've had werewolf, which has been amazing. It was a good experience.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, it's an odd thing.
Yeah.
To talk about it. So I think you're very brave.
Well, I am one of many, my lovely, and, you know, one American said to me once, the only reason you had a negative experience is because you're negative, and I'm like, I'm the least negative person around, and the lady was being abducted every night of the week, and he had all the answers, and then we had another British guy on there talking about battling off while reptilians, I lost the plot. I wanted to sing to really show how quality in air because Love and Light was dealing with the other one and it just went ping-tong. And I thought, this is the problem. We're not getting anywhere, are we? But I think it's a personal voyage and it's a personal individual connection. And I think we will find, just like when we depart this plane, that it is a unique experience to you as the individual and your journey henceforth.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. This is not the end. This is merely a phase of conscious awareness in this third dimensional reality. I joked and said we must have been drunk on the other side to come down here. And when I get on the other side, I'm going to say to them, what on earth was that all about? Where's the refund desk? I'll get it. I've always said that. People joke and I'm like, I'm not going back down there again. You can turn it from me. But I suppose things that we did, it was different when I saw it. There was no one there, but it was like complete, total. It was like being awake, and the memory of that I've always had, that I always knew, that was not present here. And I think through our limited processing of information in this realm where we are now, is recording. And occasionally some memories may filter through and slip through, take us off balance into that awareness, and then bring us back again in alignment until we ourselves separate on a soul level from the physical body. Yes. Yes. Yes, sir.
Question. Do you ever have any nightmares or nighttime experiences that take you back from what you experienced?
Well, after the initial 1989 abduction, yes, there was a recall of the event, if you want to call it that, but only one. And it was, yeah. So yes, but only once, but it was horrifying. It was like, yeah. Yes.
Do you think aliens are living in human bodies at this time on Earth?
Shall I just try and find the zip? I'm only joking. I'm joking. I'm very human.
When people talk about shape-shifting, don't they?
Oh, yes. And I think, to be honest with you, this phenomena is so weird and so strange that anything can happen. It reminds me a little bit of the film The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, although it wasn't his thing, it was created much earlier. But you know that horrible film where the being would mimic the individual, and you know, when you're on your own, the being would come into that person, suck them up and take over them? Anything can happen. I'm not discounting anything, because you hear of these multitude cases of individuals, and it's from levels of high strength that you would never believe. But it's happening to them as the only individual, and I really believe that the phenomena is linking itself on a personal level of integration. We're all trying to fit it into the boxes and be there to find all the answers, but the more we look into it, the more complex it becomes. And I think on a personal level, it is unique to you. And I think, you know, and all together, we can put the pieces together, and I think it's a lot to do with our evolution and about the struggles that we've been experiencing for those souls here who have known they're different and they want to push forward and away from this cycle of repetition, you know? I don't know where it's going to lead us. I have no idea. But I just hope that we find the answer, and I know that when we finish our incarnation here, perhaps at that point, that we might have more awareness. I'm not saying with everything, but certainly not more hindsight with regards to that. But yes, it's possible, because you hear these things. Possession, all these types of things, and it goes on and on and on. So, you know, you don't want to fry your brain, just try and kind of contain it into an area that is kind of comfortable for you, because some people have gone mad by trying to look too deeply into this. They have, trust me, they've gone mad. Then psychological issues and problems and all sorts of things. So you have to be healthy with it, yeah, because your mind might not be able to absorb and take it all in. Anyone else?
I think first of all, I think the talk was amazing. I think the way you talked about things was great.
So, well, I'm very honest, sir. Thank you.
I personally just think it's such a fascinating subject, and it's so vast.
Oh yes.
The whole. I mean, I've been into it for years, the UFOs, and, you know, ETs, you know. But I'm sort of surprised that not everyone is almost fascinated by it. I mean, this should be packed out by the point, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people.
Oh, yes.
It seems that there's only a very small number of people, really, that seem to find something which I think should be some of the most important things, really.
Well, I think perhaps that you yourselves have also been activated and awoken, and I think that creates the mystery and the magic also, doesn't it? Because without that, what have we got? We have got nothing. And a lot of people in the world today would be quite happy to take that away from you. So I think that, you know, for yourselves, keep digging, looking into it, and evolving. Just carry on with your beliefs. Let no one disrupt your belief system, whatever you believe. Even if you don't accept anything I'm talking about, that's fine. But I'll just say to you, please believe in what you believe in. It's the only way forward, you understand? Yeah, you have to understand that. How important you are also in this process of life. Mm. Never forget that is so important for you to remember. You know, I know life is hard and it comes with a lot of challenges and emotional difficulties and people being horrible and nasty and, you know, having to try and earn a little bit of money to get yourself through. But remember that your place is universal. And I think the system we serve is trying to rob us of that information, that knowledge, that magic, that mystery, and try and soil it. When I say down the system, well, that part that is only out for itself and not for us. Yes. Yeah.
So the whole thing that's going on now with the Great Awakening, you know, there's so many people following, so many people who are talking about activating 12-strand DNA and, you know, and that the aliens have lost their soul, the greys, and they're trying to get back, and they're feeding off our energy. There's all that that many, many millions of people are following. It's extraordinary how many people are following.
Yeah.
And that we're creators, we're co-creators all the time.
So of course.
To keep believing that actually we have got this.
Yes.
Otherwise we haven't got this.
Yeah, it's the same with spirit communication. Mm. We have spirit guides. Is that us sending on projection of that reality to bring it into our realm? It's possible, same with crypts and ufology.
Absolutely.
This is the area of science we must look into, but at the same token, it is there, it exists, it is real.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I believe that we perhaps are also, and I know that we are, but perhaps with that, part co-creators of that reality as well. Something we must not deny, but kind of embrace, because we don't know. But looking into our research, certainly suggests that there's a lot more going on, you understand?
Oh, there's a huge amount, and I mean the amount of people now, because of social media, all the platforms with NDEs, there's tens of thousands of people talking about it.
Because they feel comfortable to do it now.
But yes, so there's a great awakening in that itself, and also with the Dixie Cryptid, I follow him, and you know, he's got tens of thousands of people now saying, well, my great grandparents were always talking about what we now call forest dwellers or Bigfoot, whatever you want to call them. They're talking about it now, so I think the awakening is really happening now.
Yes, it is indeed. Universally, we're all awakening.
Mm.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, am I cutting in on somebody?
Yeah.
Okay. In your map of England, or Britain, where you show the trajectory of the UFOs. This could be coincidence, but are you aware that's very similar to where the Michael and Mary ley lines
go? Yes, I thought that.
It's almost exactly following the famous ley lines, Michael and Mary.
Could you send that to me when you...
I can. It would be worth just...
Yeah.
Do you know, looking at one compared to the other, clearly a number of other people thought the same, which is more than possibly the case.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, ladies. Oh, yes, sir.
You and I were talking about the existence of UFOs in history. I just wondered if you've got any information or are aware of any abduction, alien abduction type stories through history.
Well, the only most famous one is Ezekiel, you know, when he was taking up into the craft of the wheels that were turning around. That to him, the prophets tried to make out, or the authors, that it was a dream, you see. where do you differentiate fact from fantasy? This is what we've got to look at, and perhaps he was telling what was real, but they interpreted it differently. So I think it's been going on for a long time. I think they, as you said as well, they've been here for a long time. The phenomena has been here for a long time. So, yeah. But, yes.
Philip, when you were saying about when you were at the doctor's...
Oh, yes.
Did you say that she saw the crystalline object or something?
Yeah, she said...
Did you say she took it out?
No, she didn't take it. She said it looks as though it's got a crystalline structure, and it looks like it's still healing. So it stayed in the ear, they didn't move it, they didn't do anything with it. She just examined it, and then that's when the doctor left, and the doctor in front of me said, have you been abducted by aliens? So I don't know what she was talking about, she didn't make it clear to me, but I was horrified. Yeah.
All that research that Mitchell's got did, there were lots of medical healing abductions, so it's not just
Oh no, yes, I understand that.
There's lots of medical reasons.
Oh yes, I
don't know. The abduction phenomenon.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same with the NDE. People have negative experiences, some have very positive experiences. So they go hand in hand. But I'm really like into the nitty gritty part of it, you know, looking to see what these critters are. But thank you. Yes.
Just one bit. What do you think is going on with the national park disappearances then? Because some of those people never come back.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the rangers that have come forward have retired and they decided to speak out. You have to understand that in any form of employment, they are gagged. Basically, they sign a document to say that if anything happens, they're not to talk about it. And I can assure you that most of those are quite chilling. A lot of cases are quite... Now, I'm not going to put you off and go to a national park and go, journey out there, please. But it seems to target... certain individuals, and what is disturbing is, well, you look into that and you start looking into, you'll find out what I mean with regards to that. Yeah, it's quite chilling in itself. I just hope I get home all right. Thank you.
Look, I think on that score, I think you'll all agree that was a really terrific presentation, and I've learned a lot. So I think a massive hand please for Philip.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.